Welcome to Wine About History. I'm your host, Max Hamill. And with me, as always, is...
Patty.
And, well, not always, but most of the time. And today, we're covering Miles Standish, one of the pilgrims and their military leader, in reference to the fact that it was most recently Thanksgiving.
That's right. That's the perfect tie-in.
Mm-hmm. And I'll give you a little fun facts about Thanksgiving. It actually... sealed 50 years of peace between the pilgrims and the local people, the Wampanoag and four other tribes, I believe, as well as the reason it was made a national holiday is because after the Civil War, Lincoln wanted to unite the country, so he made that a holiday to unite the country again, because we were still very fractured.
Wow, that's so cool. I never knew that. I just thought it was always there.
Yeah. Well, and we are, what are we drinking today? Let me
see. Yeah.
Champs de Provence.
Yeah.
It's a rosé, and it's from Côte de Provence. Côte, I can't pronounce that. But I was there, and bad at the time, I could pronounce that. And so far, I like rosés. They're good for your stomach. And it's dry, which I'll be honest with you, I'm not a dry person. I like fruity. Some people love dry, and God bless you for it.
Well, I think it can be dry and fruity at the same time.
Can. I do have some, well, sweet and flavorful.
Oh, do you?
But I do taste a lot of fruit here.
I have to say, I'm not a huge rosé person, but I like this one. The vintage is 2018, if anyone's interested, and it seems very drinkable right now.
I definitely taste the citrus. You know, there's something I got to bring up, too. I do not let these breathe before the show as much as I should.
I don't know that this one necessarily needed it.
It doesn't, but I just want to say that for past comments, if those of you do not let wine breathe, always do let it breathe because the difference in flavor is amazing.
That's true. That's a good point.
I'll be honest, I forgot wine in the fridge once for like 20 minutes. I took it out and the flavor was...
Just enhanced the flavor a little
quite
bit.
Quite a bit, yeah. So...
So this is a good rosé. It's just a straightforward rosé, like what you think a rosé should be. It doesn't try to do anything different. I'm not even
like
sure
roses.
What kind of grapes these are, but they're good.
That's
think
my
it's
initial
good.
Appointment with the type of rosés. So Miles Standish.
Mm-hmm.
When I first heard about him, someone was at a history professor covering the pilgrims, and they were Puritans. You know, the pilgrims were Puritans. They had a very strict moral code. For instance, you couldn't sing or play music unless it was about God. So that's just a for instance. And one member of the nearby community, not their community necessarily, but a nearby community, liked to get drunk and party with Indians. They took issue with that. So.
That sounds all right to me.
Yeah. So Miles Standish, being the person he is, goes to arrest the guy. You know, that half drunk, half... hangover state people get in. Well, the guy he was arresting, whose name I can never remember, grabbed his rifle and nearly blew off his own nose.
Oops.
It was a musket.
Guns and drinking.
Do not
never, ever, from the beginning of time. Just bad idea.
Well, from the beginning of...
The beginning of invention.
The 1300s when they were invented.
Yeah, that's what
gun
I mean.
Is actually a Swedish word, because guns started out in Sweden.
I had no idea.
Gun means battle.
No kidding.
I think it was 1340. They found remnants of basically a metal tube, and they found out they actually tried to fire arrows out of it.
That's so interesting. Mm-hmm. Wow, you learned so much on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Max is having another sip of that rosé.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
One more house-clearing thing before I actually proceed with his story. But that's when that was my introduction to the guy, that he was a jerk. He had a short temper. He was rude. He was mean. Like a lot of English soldiers, they were just no-nonsense, no-mercy warriors, especially from that time period. By the way, before I proceed, The Irishman's Out, which is the Martin Scorsese film based on Frank Dashner's, the book we covered on this show. I encourage everyone who listened to the show to watch it. Netflix doesn't pay me. Martin Scorsese doesn't pay me. And they own the rights to the film, all that copyright stuff. But go see it because it's a really good interpretation of the books.
And you can see it in the theater or Netflix, is that right?
I have no idea. I watched it on Netflix.
Yeah, okay. For sure it's on Netflix.
I knew it was some indie productions and indie film releases, but
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Definitely. I saw a little bit of it so far, but it's so 3 hours, so I gotta break it up into chunks.
I broke it up in chunks too. I'm not done, but it's so good. So, Miles Standish was born in 1584 in Lancashire, England, and he served in the 80 Years' War, which is a conflict between the Republic of Dutch United Provinces and Spain. And basically, was Spain. Spain used religion as the politics to start a war with the Dutch provinces. And the Queen Elizabeth took issue with that and sided with the Dutch. And there's actually, that's a whole other story. He fought in that war. And then the Pilgrims hired him as their military leader and protector because he was a hardened veteran. So when the Mayflower anchored on Cape Cod in November 15th of 1620, it was Miles that led the landing party.
So can you imagine what that must have been like for them?
Mars. You've been landing on Mars.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just can't even imagine. They've been on a boat for, like, what, a year? I mean, it had to have taken forever.
It took forever. I believe the normal crossing was 3 months.
3 months. But it was longer. Might as well be a year. I mean, that's just an insane amount of time, mm-hmm, to be cooped up on a boat. And then finally, yay, we're on land, but what's it going to be like?
Mm-hmm. And on December 11th, they had no idea. They had really had no idea.
No. Mm-mm.
December 11th, he led a group of 18 men to explore the area by boat. And one night, they were attacked by 30 warriors. Because, to be honest, they didn't know what they were doing. No one knew. Everyone, like, that's my rule with people in history. Very few people knew what they were doing. Everyone was just trying to stay alive. So these 30 warriors were possibly Nasset people. If I pronounce anything wrong, and you are of these ethnic groups and tribes, don't mean anything by it. I'm terrible at pronouncing things. The Nasset people. And Standish stopped his men from shooting their arbacuses, because he didn't want any of them to die, because he knew it would reflect. So they kind of fended them off, and that became the day of first contact. So let me go into a little bit with the equipment they would have had. They would have had metal steel helmets, kind of like the Middle Ages, except they had a ridge in the top for structural purposes and a round, curved brim. Also, so someone who sorts you, it stops an inch from your head instead of at your head. They would have worn heavy steel breastplates, which would have been perfect for stopping spears, arrows, although flint is actually, obsidian, it actually is much sharper than steel and can go through steel.
Wow.
Very easily, actually. It's very fast. It's actually sharp, you know, but I won't get into that. They also would have had pikes and cutlasses and rapiers. Rapiers are long, thin swords. You see them a lot with fencing. And they would have had something called an arbacus. Now, an arbacus is a musket's grandfather. Now, what it is it's basically, some of you know what a muzzleloader is, but it's a big, heavy mini cannon. It's more like a handheld cannon than anything else. It was so heavy they had to carry along little sticks to shoot it on. And they pack it full of powder, kind of like a muzzleloader, put the wad in, put the round in, and then there would have been firelock, which means there was a burning brand. They pulled the trigger, the brand would hit powder in a little metal plate called the frizzen, and that would ignite it. And these were not accurate by any means. Up until the Napoleonic War, the bullets would actually bounce around inside the barrel. So that's why rifling was so important. The rifling is grooves inside, spiral grooves inside the barrel that actually catch the bullet and spin it. So this was not an effective weapon, but it works if you have 50 people firing at a group of 50 people. So that's the equipment they had. It was very, very medieval for them. So when the Pilgrims built their fort, Standish gave them important advice about the construction. And in the first winter, only 50 of the approximate 100 survived.
What?
Yes.
Oh, they just were not prepared. They didn't have enough firewood, or they didn't...
It was mostly disease.
Oh, winter kills people.
Winter kills people, and especially a winter you're not used to. You know, they're used to English winters, Dutch winters. Because the Puritans actually went from England to Holland and then to the New World. And Standish's wife was not among the ones that survived. And during this trying time, while his wife was dying, Miles Standish was known for providing comfort for the sick and the dying. Mm-hmm. And he was a pillar of the community. So we have someone who is equal parts kind to some people, cruel to others. So he's, just want to let out that he's a complicated person. So a militia was formed because they were worried about foreign powers, not just native people. They were worried the French would kill them, the Spanish would kill them. Because, you know, you're out in the middle of nowhere. There's no one to protect you. You, the average person today, unless they lived in a third world country where there were no rules, has no idea what life was like for them or the native people. The native people have been more stable and have actually their lives were way better than the pilgrims. But a militia was formed, and Standish was elected its leader. Surprise, surprise. And the leader of the, I'm going to try and get this one, Pocahontas people, who are Massawat, his name was Massawat, signed a treaty with the colonists. And it's for the mutual defense of their people, which is very smart on Massawat's part. New player comes into town, make an ally of them immediately. So the Poconet's enemies were the Massachusetts and the Narragansetts. And Standish was known for, like I said, he was known for his temper. He was kind of a short man, you know, prone to just whip out and pull his gun and shoot people, or shoot at people, rather. So he employed a lot of intimidation tactics against the enemies of the Pocahontas. Now, this made the civil leader, because they had the war leader and the civil leader, William Bradford, nervous, because he wanted peace, he wanted kindness. He and Standish were complementary personalities. This is a bad matter. This is a bad one, but Standish is Captain Kirk, and William Bradford is Spock. I do not own those entities. Copyright laws. But that's just a metaphor for you. So this alliance was tested, and the peace of the local area was really tested in something called the Nemasket Raid. Now, I'm trying to get this name right. Corbatant, who was a local sachem, that's a word for leader, he riled people against Massawat in the Poconet village of Nemkeset. Wow, these are a lot of names. So he was trying, there was political infighting. He was trying to rile up the people against the pilgrims, against Massawat. So Habamak, which was an ally, and he was actually a very, very important native people. He was a warrior. He's a very good hunter. And so Habamak and Tisquantum, also known as Squanto, the famous Squanto, who helped them survive, went to try and make peace with Corbatant. And Corbatant took Squanto / Tisquantum captive, and Habamak ran away to warm Plymouth. They met Standish and then became fast friends until they died. In fact, Standish became such a good friends with Habamak, he moved him into his house, and they became part of the family.
Isn't it nice that there's peacemakers out there?
There is peacemakers out there.
It makes everything so much better, ultimately.
It does. The this is what I find so interesting about all this stuff is the politics of the time, the back and forth. If you read Native American history, there's these constant attempts from good people to make peace, and all it takes is one jerk.
It does. Like Corbatant, I know.
Or if you read the history, all it takes is one drunk translator who thinks he understands Lakota dialect, but he's actually speaking Dakota dialect. Screwing up. And if you read, as tragic as the history, it's hard to read some of these histories, but there's back and forth of people trying to make peace, somebody screws up. Trying to make peace, somebody screws up.
Yeah, I know. That's human history.
Nothing we can do about it now.
You know, if they were smart, they would send, like, little kids over to, you know, spend a year with each, because little kids pick up on languages, like, instant. Oh, is it?
There was a lot
smart.
Of
that was really
back
smart.
And forth. Some of it was actually as a result of raiding, because a lot of native cultures and European descendants don't like killing kids. Killing kids isn't nice. And no, not everyone can physically do it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of adoption back and forth, and there's a lot of that's for another episode.
I suppose we should move on.
Yes, we should
with
move
this
on.
One.
This is not about. So Standish led a party of men with the intention of rescuing Squanto and capturing Corbitant. So, and then Stannis had men surround the village, and he's a great warrior, and so is Habermock. They burst into the village. His men fired their muskets, and they wounded a man and a woman, who were just innocent bystanders. They found that Corbitant were already run away, and Squanto was unharmed. So Standish brought the wounded couple back to be treated.
Aw, nice. Plymouth,
and the raid had the intended effect, and 9 sachems, included Corbitant, signed a peace treaty. But it was complicated. We wouldn't really understand it, because it was about loyalty to the king. But for all intents and purposes, it was to make peace. So that was the first big test of stability in the area. And there was also a plot to destroy a place called Wessagasset in April 1622 in the Plymouth Settlements. Now, these warriors are trying to wipe out these European colonies, which probably would not have worked out in their favor. I mean, they definitely could have done it, but there's this group called the Merchant Adventurers who funded this whole expedition. They're going to want their money back. They're going to want to find out what happened. So there would have been investigations. But back to Standish, Standish knew about this, and he didn't want to have to deal with it. So there was constant confrontation between him and the main warrior who was doing this, whose name I gave up trying to pronounce. That's why I'm not going to include it. I gave up. So they tried to make peace, And so here's what happened. Standish lured that warrior in a little hut to try and make peace attempts. Didn't work, so he killed him with his own knife, had his Habermock and his friends kill the other conspirators, then he beheaded the leader and brought his head back to...
Here we go.
Yeah.
Grizzly facts of the...
Yeah, well, that's what happened. And Standish is someone who was born in 1584. Cutting people's heads off was Tuesday.
Okay. Seems gruesome, but all right.
But that had the psychological effect. No one tried to wipe out Plymouth or Wagasset as a result of that. The next thing that happened in 1625 was the Merrimount settlement. Now, the Merrimount was full of heavy drinkers. They didn't obey the Sabbath, and they sold guns to the Indians. Now, the last thing you want to do is arm the people who already outnumber you with your only advantage.
So, yeah, why did they do that?
Because they were dumb.
Yeah.
And maybe there was people in there who were like, it'll all work out. It'll work out for now until one person misunderstands something. There's one cultural taboo that no one understands. Next thing you know...
Guns a-blazing.
They also danced around the maypole. For those of you who don't know what that means, it's a pagan tradition where people dance around a maypole. But basically,
I'm just picturing that, drinking and dancing around the maypole, having a good old time. Guns, wow, yeah.
So Texas, really?
Texas.
So here's what happened: Bradford and the rest of the Puritans are like, this is not okay, especially the selling the guns as our only advantage. So Standish went over there, beat the crap out of everybody, and disbanded the colonies. I told you he was a jerk. So, and there, he had a lot of other adventures than that, but those are the big highlights of his career. I mean, there was lots of scandal in his life. He remarried. But I'm focusing on his role as a military leader in that time period, because that's what he was known for. Another, for instance, he got involved in a scandal. He went to arrest someone, and part of the scandal, and that person called him a silly little boy.
Those are fighting words.
Those are killing words back then. Those are,
yeah.
I'll challenge you to a duel.
Oh, yeah. Gutting. Now you'd be like, whatever, dude.
If you're sober, yeah.
But back then, poof! Yeah. Call me a silly little boy.
Actually, they're weapons. So it's a burning bit of string. Woven string hits the pan, so it'd be more like. Wait a second,
and you could like outrun that probably.
Dang near, dang near. So, in 1626, the colonists paid off their debts to the merchant adventurers who had funded them. This allowed them to expand. And a lot of things were happening too. A disease had ravaged the area, so a lot of these villages were empty. There are a lot of places that these colonists, by the way, did not bring that disease over. That's unrelated to the Plymouth settlers. But it ravaged the area, so there were a lot of empty lands that no one was occupying. So they expanded, and Standish settled in a place called Duxbury, which was a 120-acre farm. He built a house, and Habermock came in, became part of his household. And when he turned 51, he took a more administrative role in the colony's defense. You know, he was, you know, for instance, there was a threat. Instead, he trained the troops and apprenticed their leader, that sort of thing. In the 1640s, he became much more of an administrator. He became their colony treasurer. He surveyed highways, things of that nature. And he became more, far more of a leader in a civil sense than a military sense. And he passed on October 3rd, 1656.
Ah. How old was he then?
I didn't do the math.
To be honest with you. All right. Well, probably pretty old for that.
So he died in 80. He born in 84. That's
all right. We don't have to do math right now. We just had a glass of wine.
So he was in probably in his 70s, which is pretty old.
Yeah, it's probably pretty old.
Most people, look at this misconception. Most people, if you made it past into your teens, you're almost guaranteed to make it to 50, which would be our 70. 50 was their 70.
So 70 is the new 50? Woohoo!
I guess. Never mind. That reference went over my head.
It's because you're too young to get that joke.
Yeah, no, I'm not that young. I just wasn't expecting it. But yeah, but most people lived to 50 back then. They just had huge infant mortality rates.
Yeah, that's true.
So what do you think? What do you think about this guy? I didn't dig too deep into him because there's so much, too much history. I mean, if you notice, I don't do deep cuts a lot because there's almost too much history.
Oh, you kind of have to round it off. I think he's an impressive guy, and he did what he set out to do. Mm-hmm. And there was some tragedy along the way for sure. Losing his wife had to have just been horrible. Mm-hmm. And but ultimately, it sounds like he did the goal of what he meant to do.
He was not a nice man. He was never meant to be.
Well, you know, sometimes leaders aren't. Mm-hmm. They have to lead, and it's not a popularity contest. Mm-hmm. They just have to get the job done.
That's one thing that historians are good for and historians are bad for is objective judgment about morality. Because you're in the moment. There's no morality.
Right.
That's one thing I've never understood about people judging history. It's that you're right, but at the same time, you weren't there. No one was trying to kill you. People were trying to kill you.
Oh, for sure.
It's hard to be like, I wonder what people will moralize about this 100 years from now. No, you're like, oh, I'm being stabbed. Stop, stop, stop.
Yeah.
I can see my organs. Yeah. So I think he was the very much typical British soldier where they have no intention of being moral. They have no intention of being nice. Am I fighting the fight that protects these people? Yes. All right. Objective done. Objective done.
Just like this episode.
Just like this episode. Because I'm enjoying my wine a little bit too much. It's starting to get to my head. This is a good wine. I like it more now.
For sure.
That's one thing about rosé. I love it, personally. All right. So any more afterthoughts? Any house cleaning?
Nope.
We are going to set up a website soon.
Yay.
And when that occurs, it will hopefully be up by the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully. Now, I say hopefully because whenever I say this is going to happen for sure, something happens. Every time.
Max is working on it.
I'm working on it. I mean, but I'm at this point, I'm waiting for my computer to blow up, knock on wood.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how it works. Go see the Netflix. Remember, tweet us. The link will be in the show notes. All that fun stuff. If you have any comments, criticisms, suggestions for people who do review, let us know. I'll do it.
Right. It makes us better. That's what we're all about.
So who are we doing next episode, you may ask? Who are we doing next episode?
I have no idea.
He doesn't know. We are going to attempt to do George C. Marshall, who was the leader of the Allied forces during World War II. And most people don't know his name. They know Patton. They know MacArthur. They know Goring. They know Charles de Gaulle. But most people do not know about Marshall. And he's exactly the kind of person I started this podcast to cover.
Awesome.
Underrated hero. So, thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, thank you. Hope everyone had a good Thanksgiving.
And remember, we'll see you in the next episode. And
if it weren't for history, we wouldn't be here.